thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
The president's plan is purely performative.
Illinois' Attorney General joins us to talk about the legal challenges the state could make if President Trump does deploy the National Guard to Chicago. Chicago school board members are set to face a crucial budget vote tomorrow. We hear from the interim CEO on the district's financial challenges.
To have the community reclaim this building and repurpose it.
And the Austin community comes together to transform a closed school into a workforce training hub. First off tonight, Illinois officials say they haven't gotten any communication from the Trump administration after reports that it may use a local naval base to house National Guard troops or federal immigration agents. The Sun-Times has reported the administration is considering the naval station Great Lakes in suburban North Chicago. Governor J.B. Pritzker says his office hasn't received any calls from the White House or federal officials regarding the matter. It's the latest development as President Donald Trump has threatened to send troops into Chicago to address crime, despite data showing violent crime is down in the city. Joining us to discuss all that and more is Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul. Attorney General, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with the possible National Guard deployment. Governor J.B. Pritzker and other public officials, including yourself, gathered earlier this week to denounce the threat. Here is what Pritzker had to say.
This is not about fighting crime. This is about Donald Trump searching for any justification to deploy the military in a blue city, in a blue state, to try and intimidate his political rivals.
AG, what laws might the president invoke to accomplish this?
Well, there's a framework through the Posse Comitatus Act as to when the president can federalize the National Guard. There'd either have to be a foreign invasion, rebellion from within, or an inability to enforce a federal law because of inadequate resources through regular means. And none of those circumstances exist in regards to dealing with crime in Chicago. We have continuous, great working collaboration with federal law enforcement agencies, including the FBI, the DEA, ATF, Secret Service, HSI. And if the president wanted to contribute to fighting crime in Chicago, he could enhance those already existing collaborations between local, state, and federal law enforcement with more resources and stop cutting resources from police departments, from victim services, and from community violence interruption.
So the National Guard, currently deployed in Washington, D.C., as we know, which the federal government has jurisdiction over, but the president's administration is currently facing a legal challenge out of California after he deployed the National Guard there to L.A. Governor Pritzker has told the president he will see him in court over this issue. Is there legal recourse before we get to the point of the National Guard being here, or does it have to wait until after the president issues his order?
It's all fact dependent on a day-to-day basis, on what is said, what is ordered, what is explicitly put in orders. It's difficult to react to just varying statements from the president. So it's a bit premature as I sit here talking to you this evening. There's no preemptive act that I would take right now. But certainly if those conditions are not met, that I laid out for you earlier, and the guard is sent into the city to do policing, for instance, that might trigger a legal action.
Then what do you say to Chicagoans who would welcome National Guard here to help address crime?
Well, what I would say to them is that the National Guard is not trained in crime fighting. I spoke to you about agencies in the federal government who are trained to do so. We have a tremendous partnership with the ATF and a tremendous ATF special agent in charge, and they have a crime gun intelligence center. And they've been partnering with my office, with the Chicago Police Department. We've got a great superintendent and Superintendent Snelling. with the state police and with the Cook County Sheriff's Office, as well as other local law enforcement agencies. Those are collaborations that depend upon constant communication and a one-team concept, and they're ongoing collaborations. So National Guard would not help. They're not trained, and they, quite frankly, they wouldn't know what they would be, need to be doing.
Meanwhile, the Naval Station Great Lakes has been approached by the Department of Homeland Security regarding a potential request to support U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement operations. At this time, no decisions have been made, but in a statement that we received, it reads, quote, Naval Station Great Lakes has been approached by the Department of Homeland Security regarding a potential request to support U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement operations. At this time, no decisions have been made. The request involves limited support in the form of facilities, infrastructure, and other logistical needs to support DHS operations, but they say that they also have not received any official request to support the National Guard. What do you think when you hear something like that?
Well, it's interesting because from what I understand in California and in D.C. to some extent, they sent guardsmen into these cities without adequate preparation for their well-being. You know, there were stories of guardsmen in L.A. who didn't have adequate places to sleep, to rest, to eat. These people are not being appropriately treated, people who have lent themselves to service to our country. And so I don't know what else to say about the bad planning from our president and the administration just to create a performative show of force.
So separately, Adams County Sheriff Tony Grutens in Western Illinois, he has said that he intends to aid the Department of Homeland Security in its deportation efforts. WTTW News obtained records showing that the county did indeed transfer at least two men into ICE custody. Do you see this as a violation of the state's Trust Act, which prevents local law enforcement from supporting the federal government's immigration deportation efforts?
Well, I'm not going to say too much about that particular case because we have to examine all the specifics. You know, there are sheriffs and individuals who can proclaim a lot. You know, I looked at some of the statements that he made that were represented in media, various media reports, saying things like there have been a few, and it's very vague statements. So clearly the law of the state of Illinois is that law enforcement, state and local law enforcement resources are not supposed to be used for immigration enforcement. Sheriffs are sworn officers that are supposed to abide by the law. And so that's all I will say about that right now.
Okay. On Monday, President Trump signed another executive order called Taking Steps to End Cashless Bail to Protect Americans. It seeks to block federal funding to states that eliminated cash bail. Illinois is, of course, one of those states. It did so in 2023 under the Pretrial Fairness Act. What's your reaction again to the president's order on this?
Well, I would turn him to the federal court system that largely doesn't rely upon a cash bail. They rely upon assessing whether an individual is a risk to public safety or a flight risk. And that's the system that we have right now without cash bail. Whether or not somebody can afford to post bond is not determinative of whether they are a risk to public safety. Somebody can have access to a lot of money and be a risk to public safety. And so the notion that cash bail keeps people safe is a misplaced notion. We should be doing risk assessment, assessing whether somebody is a risk to public safety or whether they're a flight risk, regardless of what they can afford.
Does your office intend to challenge this order?
Well, not the order. The order is not specific enough in terms of a specific action. If there is indeed funding conditioned on whether or not our state is a no cash bail state, then yeah, we'll challenge that. But the order doesn't take that second step.
Gotcha. Another controversial executive order that the president signed last month. This one is called Ending Crime and Disorder on America's Streets. This one claims, quote, endemic vagrancy, disorderly behavior, sudden confrontations, and violent attacks have made our cities unsafe. One way to fix such issue, according to the order, is by restoring civil commitment, and that is the involuntary commitment of individuals experiencing homelessness who may be mentally unwell. What is your reaction to the push for local and state governments to revive that practice?
Well, there's a Supreme Court a decision in Olmstead from 1999 that sets the framework of making sure that people with disabilities are protected from being unfairly committed. And so the spirit of the order seems to be violative of that. What specifically they may do in follow-up to that, we'd have to evaluate on a case-by-case basis, and I'm sure individuals who would have their rights violated individually would have a right to action.
Okay, that's where we'll have to leave it. Attorney General Kwame Raoul, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Up next, the interim head of the Chicago Public Schools on tackling the district's budget challenges.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Chicago Public Schools isn't just facing a budget crunch, but also a time crunch. The Chicago Board of Education is set to vote on the district's budget proposal tomorrow, just before the state deadline on Friday. Officials laid out a plan that aims to close the $734 million budget gap, but district leaders are still debating whether a loan should be a part of the final plan and if the district should take on the city's pension payment. Joining us now is Chicago Public Schools interim CEO, Macklin King. Congrats on the new position. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Brandis.
So let's start with that pension payment. Last night, we heard from two board members who tell us that the district has already scaled back as much as it can without affecting the classroom with this budget proposal, and that if the CPS budget were to take on that much-debated pension payment, it would certainly lead to classroom cuts. What would those cuts look like in the classroom?
Well, the budget that we presented is balanced, and it is a responsible budget, and it protects the budgets that school principals received in the spring. It protects labor agreements, and it also protects the post-COVID gains that students have received. So as it's written, there is no need for additional cuts. And we've added a provision that the MEABF payment or the pension payment would be made if additional resources were made available.
So then to clarify, and for folks who are speculating on it, this does not mean, this budget means there are no mid-year cuts to be concerned about.
Agreed, yes. So this budget was created with going line by line. We looked at all the different possibilities for savings. And in addition to that, a lot of the savings were structural. So these are savings that we can realize in the future as well.
The 2025 CPS budget, so last year's budget, it relied on additional TIF dollars that didn't come, which the mayor blasted former CEO Pedro Martinez over. Why rely on TIF funding again with this budget? The release that you all sent out this afternoon demonstrates that you can expect more TIF funding in the coming year's budget.
So the TIF funding that's assumed in the budget, that's normal. Each year there's an assumption of the amount of TIF that the school district will receive. And the amount that's assumed in this budget is the same amount that the district received last year. So it's reasonable. And historically, the city of Chicago, there's a TIF surplus. And so we've just used the trend from historic funds received from the city.
Do you believe TIF funds to be a reliable source of funding for the district?
There is a need for, you know, state support and reform of how CPS is funded. So we recognize that, however, in this moment, you know, to close this budget gap, that we do need additional assistance that's immediate.
Chalkbeat is reporting that your CFO has advised the board that it could authorize emergency borrowing after this budget has passed with just a simple majority versus the two-third majority that is needed for budget amendments. How likely is more borrowing for the district?
With the current budget, there is no need for an immediate loan. However, we do recognize that in the event of an emergency, the district does have the ability and flexibility to borrow.
An emergency? What can an emergency be for a school district?
Well, federal impacts, if there were additional federal cuts, you know, that could be something that could impact our budget.
Got it. The district also says its debt service is more than $28,000 per student at $800 million per year. Chalkbeat is reporting that the district is only one of three districts across the country whose revenues are below their debt or whose debt service exceeds its revenue. How does CPS get a handle on this?
I think the budget that we presented is a start, and that's with the structural changes that we've made. So we can assure that those savings will roll over and that the deficit that we're facing in years to come is reduced by the amount of the structural savings that we found as a result of the impacts that we had to make.
You were appointed with the mayor's backing, of course, and approved by the board with an 11-8 vote. Previous CPS CEO Pedro Martinez, he was fired by the previous board, particularly over disagreements over borrowing to cover expenses. What impact might this dispute over whether or not to take out a loan, what impact might it have on your relationship with the mayor and City Hall?
Since this starts my 33rd year serving the students of Chicago, and in my capacity as a principal and advising first under Mayor Lightfoot and Mayor Johnson, I work constructively and collaboratively. And so this decision will not affect my relationship with Mayor Johnson or labor partners. It is the students and the families rely on me to ensure that those relationships are strong so that we can continue to face any of the challenges that are ahead of us as a district.
11 board members have written you a letter saying that they find it difficult to support this current budget proposal without either the pension payment included and or the option for a loan if it's needed. Do you feel comfortable that you've got the votes for tomorrow?
I feel confident that all board members and the mayor, we all really want the same thing for students. We want students to succeed. We want to ensure that students have the best possible experience. The pathway forward and how we get there is different. You know, we see different paths forward, and I respect the board members. They've had a lot of information put in front of them, and I'm sure that they're going to make the best decision for our students.
What would happen if board members decide to make amendments tomorrow and they do push through either a loan and or the pension payment or authority for a loan?
I respect the board members' decision. If that's the budget that's passed, I would implement that budget and continue to work constructively with those board members, all board members, and the city and our community partners.
What concerns do you have about the impact of this budget uncertainty on parents and students?
I think with the opening day of school, that's the why, and I feel like the parents are trusting the board members, myself, and all of our labor partners to do the right thing. And I believe as a result of some of the community roundtables that we attended, I think that they'll see themselves in this budget, the one that I propose. I think they'll see themselves within this budget and that they can rally around and support us.
There's also, of course, there's going to be pressure from, as you said, your labor partners, Chicago Teachers Union in particular. Here's a bit of their response to the budget plan earlier today.
We want to make sure that we have a real plan for Chicago Public Schools moving forward. These cuts that you have been hearing about and some of the cuts that you haven't heard about is a result of decades of disinvestment in our in Chicago Public Schools to the tune of $2 billion per year. Legislator after legislator, governor after governor has failed Chicago Public School students.
You're an educator as well, of course. What is your relationship like with CTU and its leadership?
I work well with all of our labor partners. You know, again, we all want the same thing for our students. We all have different roles, but we're all equally as responsible for the success of our students. And so I respect their opinions about how do we, you know, how they see this budget. But the budget that we put forth was one that was not just a lot of work line by line looking at the budget, but also it represents the feedback that we received from parents and community members and teachers and principals. So I feel that what we see with this budget represents what's best for our students.
You are about 2 months into this job as the interim CEO.
Yes.
It's good that you're finding your way around the building. Are you interested in having this job permanently?
I entered with two main goals: present a balanced budget and open schools smoothly. And I have accomplished those two goals. Well, we'll see as of tomorrow, right? However, I'm working really hard just to nail those two accomplishments as of tomorrow, and then we'll see where it takes me.
Okay. Best of luck to you tomorrow. We'll be keeping an eye on it. Chicago Public Schools Interim CEO Macquelin King, thank you for joining us.
Best of luck. Thank you.
Up next, transforming a long vacant school building, but first, a look at the weather. A shuttered school is transforming into a community hub. Our Joanna Hernandez reports on a workforce center in Austin bringing new opportunities to the Westside neighborhood's residents.
This floor we're seeing here.
This is actually the floor from the old auditorium.
Okay.
This floor is over 100 years old.
Wow, so it was important to keep some of the elements of the school.
It was important to keep some of those elements, but we saw it as an opportunity to also build off of that history.
Darnell Shields is one of the leaders behind the Aspire Workforce Innovation Hub in Austin. He describes the center as a one-stop shop for the community.
It's a full-on collaboration between workforce development organizations, financial institutions. We have a legal center in the building.
The former Emmett Elementary School was one of 50 schools closed by former Mayor Rahm Emanuel in Chicago Public Schools in 2013. The Westside Health Authority and Austin coming together collaborated to redevelop the vacant school.
I love that my community stood up and said, hey, no more. We have to gain control. And that's what they did. And folks put together a vision.
Shields, who grew up in Austin, gave us a tour of the space.
Right now, we're on the second level of this public side of the space, right? It's a mezzanine deck. And here is where, you know, it's more open access seating. You can come, you can prop up, again, to do your Zoom meeting with your laptop or so forth, as well as smaller conference rooms that you can reserve.
In addition to offering workshops, the three-story building provides a variety of programs and resources to the community through different organizations. One of these services is provided by the Jane Addams Resource Corporation, operating manufacturing training programs inside Aspire. Cedric Webb is one of the participants who has qualified for their free training program.
Somebody took the time to invest in Austin. Every time I come in, I'm still at awe. When I come out and park in the lot and use the key fob to get in, whether it's JARC or any other programs that's in here, this place can change your life.
The Austin neighborhood has a long history of disinvestment. But Shield says he's optimistic this initiative will open doors for local youth and adults, empowering them with career training and support.
There was a great intention with this development. That's why the design of it is so grand, to serve as this beacon, because we wanted to make a point that, no, we can break that cycle.
Born and raised in the Austin neighborhood, Alyssa Sherman says introducing something new and accessible to residents will start creating a new mindset.
Don't think small, think big, think more, as big as possible. That way we can work towards it rather than trying to say, oh no, that can't happen out here. No, think big, so that way we can learn new processes and new strategies to get to that level.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez.
The organization Austin Coming Together recently released a documentary called The Good News, which highlights how the community has come together to create places like the Workforce Center. And that's our show for this Wednesday night. Check out our website for the very latest from WTTW News and join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. President Trump threatens to yank funding from states like Illinois that have eliminated cash bail. We'll hear local reaction. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm working to preserve the dignity and rights of all individuals.